Welcome to the Banned Library Podcast. A podcast where we talk about books that have been banned or censored or maybe put on the short list. Maybe put on the list where, you know, these aren't good enough. These aren't smart enough. Nobody likes them. Let's just throw them away. They don't fit with our natural inclination to just do things the way we think they should be done. Of course, this week, this month, February, we are dealing with short stories because it's the short month and I needed to catch up. You can put quotation marks wherever you want on those sentences. Today we're handling Story of an Hour by Kate Chopin, not really sure how you say that, but she is a renowned short story and long form writer. There is one book of hers that has been banned, but this one was pretty much, well, people just didn't like it. No specific instances of it being banned. I just sort of came across it and was like, oh, this story's awesome. It got written up a lot in several different, like essays and things like that about just why people were so offended by this story. So let's get into Miss Kate, because I'm just going to call her Miss Kate so I don't keep saying her name wrong. She was born Kathleen O'Flattery, St. Louis, Missouri, February 8th, 1850. So we just missed her birthday. I'm sorry about that, Kate. She was the third of five children, but her sisters died in infancy and her half-brothers from her father's first marriage, they all died in their early 20s. So she pretty much grew up by herself. 1855, when she was just 5 years old, her father died and she developed a close relationship with her mother, maternal grandmother, and great-grandmother, which pretty much started her down the line of thinking women needed a better place in the society than what they had. And she became an avid reader of fairy tales and poetry, religious allegories, all that normal stuff that people, kids start to read, you know, in the 1850s, especially classic and contemporary novels. She graduated from Sacred Heart Convent in St. Louis in 1868. On June 8th, 1870, she married Oscar Chopin, however you say her name, and settled with him in his hometown of New Orleans, which I'll go ahead and plug my other podcast, the Big Easy Podcast, about New Orleans history, where I go in and just say, hey, you ever heard about this person, place, or thing? Most current episode for February was Louis Armstrong, which lived a fascinating life, so go listen to him and that. She had six children, so back to New Orleans and Miss Kate. She had six children between 1871 and 1879. Unfortunately, in 1879, his brokerage, cotton farming thing, whatever he had, I guess it was a cotton brokerage, so I guess he bought and sold cotton as it came out of the plantations, because they still had plantations during Reconstruction. Remember that. People are always making money. Anyway, they left the city and they moved to Clouderville in South Nacogdoches Parish. I think that's how you say that. Cloutierville? Who knows? French pronunciations being what they are. I know it is Nacogdoches. And they managed several small plantations and a general store there. She became active in the community, absorbed materials for her future writing. This is pretty much where she started, like, getting into small town, learning about people, especially in this Louisiana area. And the Creole culture and the people of color and just everyone. She just sort of gathered people, like most writers do. Fortunately, he died in 1882 and left her about $42,000 in debt, approximately $420,000 if you're coming close to today's money, maybe even more than that now with our current economic climate. According to her biographer and, I don't know, editor, the book I read was one of her edited collections. Emily Toth is the editor. Quote, for a while, the widow Kate ran his business and flirted outrageously with the local men. She even engaged in a relationship with a married farmer, if you can believe that. Now, I don't know if there's, I'll say allegedly and just move on from there. But yes, she was very outspoken in most of her beliefs that women not be seen and heard and all that nonsense. So her mother asked her to move back to St. Louis. Come on, bring the kids. we'll help you out. And her mother helped her out with her finances and got her back on, you know, got her back on track. They'd moved from this small Louisiana town back to St. Louis, which is a pretty big city at this time. Unfortunately, right after she got there, her mother died. At this time, after, you know, husband, mom, everybody else probably passes off, she starts struggling with depression. And the doctor, Dr. Frederick Kolbenhager, whatever, he said, hey man, why don't you just start writing? People seem to like work out some shit when they write. That's not an exact quote, but you know, maybe you can help it out. You know, get out some energy, get out some focus. When you start feeling down, write a story about your, you know, your friends, your families. Well, turned out it was pretty good. By the 1890s, she began writing short stories, articles, translations, and got published everywhere, including the St. Louis Post-Dispatch newspaper. She was quite successful, placed many of her publications in literary magazines, got really good. She was considered at her time a local, like, regional writer. She wrote about, you know, St. Louis, and she wrote about South Louisiana and Louisiana people. And yeah, everybody, and because travel was limited, most people wanted to hear about different parts of the country, so that's how you understood it. It's sort of like watching the Beverly Hillbillies to understand what life is like in the big city of Los Angeles with their cement ponds. And yeah, Southern folk life, that sort of, her writing was seemed to give a sort of a snapshot of the times. And thankfully, later on, it became much better known as a literary writing. She's very well done for her quality in literary articles. Her second novel, in 1889, pissed people off pretty good. And this is the novel we'll probably cover later, The Awakening. Pretty much everybody, including its women characters, behaved in ways that conflicted with certain standards. They, you know, there's adultery, they're just unladylike. And she just was like, hey, I want to talk about, you know, female sexuality and my life and motherhood and everything that comes along with it. But anyway, most actual people turned a nose at it, but it did get some good reviews, actually. So yeah, after this point is when she really ramps up the short story writing. She gets put into Who's Who's magazines, and she gets pretty popular. Unfortunately, at the St. Louis Fair on August 20th, 1904, she suffered a brain hemorrhage and died 2 days later, age 54. She was interred at Calvary Cemetery in New Orleans, and that is where she is to this day. And yeah, just a pretty, if you even read the book, when I first read the novel, I like to go in clean. You know me, I just pick up the book and start reading and draw my conclusions as I may. I honestly thought this was like written in the 50s, maybe. I mean, you can sort of tell that it's dated-esque, but not really. There's nothing that super crazy happens in it. I mean, not everybody pulls out cell phones or whatever, but this could easily be a current day novel. And the fact that it was written in 1894, I'll give you some basic information. This story was written April 19th, 1894, originally published in Vogue December 6th, 1894 as The Dream of an Hour. It was later reprinted in St. Louis Life on January 5th of the next year as Story of an Hour. And yeah, it's really well done. Like, it's timeless. It's really good. Her language is simple. Direct, much like Twain or any other common writer at the time. Or common, you know, bona fide, someone who could actually write, whatever word you want to use. It reads like modern text. You don't get that a lot with, you know, folks that just sit down and want to write up a story. It's also short, too, so maybe that helped her out. You know, she cut down some lines. It was super controversial. If we want to get into the band or why it's on here, basically because it features a female protagonist who feels liberated by the news of her husband's death. Spoiler alert. Again, Emily Toth, her editor, biographer, whatever you want to call her, she says that she basically had to have her heroine die. And I think this is Toth's own beliefs. Because at the time period, having her feel this elation that she's free of her marriage was such a wrong thing that the protagonist herself has to die because, well, she has to be punished for those feelings, right? Because that's not how people are supposed to feel. So at the end of the story, she dies as well. So it's a spoiler alert. And yeah, it's kind of funny that that's the way she thinks. Honestly, I don't think that's the reason she dies at the end. I think she dies at the end because, and I haven't read any other of Kate's stories. Mrs. Kate. So I don't want to get into too much of her literary criticism. I probably will do a month of her at some point because I want to read more of her stories. But this is how I would have written the story. It's the perfect twist at the end. It's a very Twilight Zone or Alfred Hitchcock Presents. It's a very Pulp Magazine sort of, she thought he died, he's not, so she dies sort of thing. And it's set up from the beginning of the story that way. I don't think Miss Kate was going to be torturing this person at all, her protagonist. I think it's literally the counterpoint of the story. Maybe the meaning behind it. Can't always get what you want, but we'll get that at the end. And there's also I've read a bunch of articles about this story. One of the most bullshit is that there's a warning of telegraphs, of technology encroaching and keeping us apart, keeping information apart, that it comes between us and shoves us further along by its expediting of information, because news comes over the telegraph that, you know, that somehow separates us as human beings. People have been making that argument ever since there's probably some asshole that wrote on a cave wall, you know, drew the buffalo on the cave wall in France, and some other asshole went, well, this is just going to keep people from going out and hunting. It's the argument for the ages, that technology keeps us apart. It's bullshit, but here it is. So, let's get into the meat of this story. Again, very short. We're not going to be here for long. We have Mrs. Mallard. We're told that she suffers from a heart condition, and her sister and her husband's friend, Richard, have some bad news to tell her. They've had a telegram come that says, oh my God, a train wrecked, and Richard was supposed to be on it. Well, no, her husband was supposed to be on it. Mrs. Mallard's husband was supposed to be there. We've got to tell her in the nicest way possible. We've got to calm her down, you know, otherwise her heart's going to go out. She can't handle this kind of shock, so we got to tell her just as gently as possible. So they tell her, and immediately she just slumps. She goes down. She's, oh. And she says, I have to go sit in my room upstairs. You sort of can almost feel the hesitation in her, that she has to get upstairs. And she closes the door behind her, and she sits down, and she looks out this window to the picturesque nature, and I think there's a tree out there outside. It's very pretty. There's new life coming. She hears birds. She's staring out the window, thinking about her relationship to her husband. And this feeling comes over her, and it's almost a confusion. But then she realizes that this feeling that she's feeling is excitement. She's happy. Everything is, oh, there's just an exhilaration of joy. She's like, I'm free. There's nothing here. There's nothing keeping me here anymore. I can go out. I can do things. I can be myself. I don't have to be tied down to this man, my husband, who, that's where the conflict comes in. She knows she's supposed to feel bad for him dying. She knows she has to feel remorse, and she did love him after a fact, but she doesn't have to deal with his ass anymore. She begins thinking of all the different vacations, the springs and the summers, where she can just go out and sit by herself. She doesn't have to be holding and tell somebody where she's going. She doesn't have to do anything. She can enjoy things the way she used to. And she believes that this exhilaration, this is a benefit. This is going to be fucking awesome. This is going to be amazing. It's going to be great. And she knows that there's going to be, I mean, she loved the man. She married the man. She knows the man. He's gone. Those feelings are there, then he's going to be gone some. It's going to hit her. She's going to miss him being in the world, but She's not really going to miss him being beside her. Which I guess we can all feel if we've been in long-distance relationships. We're like, hey, why don't you go walk, take a walk or something? Or why don't, I'm gonna just go sit somewhere by myself. And we've all had that feeling, but she has this on the nth degree. She sees her life spreading out before her wide and far. And it's just a joy of not being tied down. She is literally invoking the ball and chain. Or she'll miss the craftsmanship of the chain and the ball itself and the, you know, walls around her. But goddamn, she's going to run. And her sister's outside and she's knocking on the door saying, come on out. You know, come on out, Miss Mallard. Louise is her real name, her first name, Christian, whatever the fuck you want to call it. Like, come on. We can't have you locked in there by yourself. Come out. Talk to us. And Louise gets up and talks to her sister. She puts on the, you know, of course, the somber face. Everybody, her sister's like, oh, she's in shock. And they start to go down the steps. And the front door opens. And they both look up and it's Louise Mallard's husband walking through the door. Alive and well, not dead. And Louise has such a shock. She has a heart attack. That she thinks he's not dead. Ah! All this hope, this dreams, everything I just had. This exhilaration of life. He's not dead. The door slammed shut, if you will. She's down. And dying. And the story ends with her doctors basically blaming her death on her poor heart disease. That it was a joy that killed her. Seeing her husband alive so exhilarated her that she died. And that's where the story ends. And it's kind of awesome. Just in its simplicity. She learns that he dies. She goes upstairs. She feels super happy about it. She comes back downstairs like trying to be the sad widow. He comes through the door. She suddenly realizes it's a very internal thing. She feels the door open. She's looking out that window, which obviously, you know, is a hope nature. It's everything in front of her. And then she goes down and the door. Of course, the front door is the one that opens to let him in. And you can almost, I don't know, part of my mind wants to have, when he closes the door, that's when her heart stops. You just hear that slam. Maybe that's what he always slammed the door that way. Like that sort of triggered her. You know, you've been around someone long enough. You know how they, what their footsteps sound like. You know what their, you know, their little sounds, their being. Whether they shuffle their feet or stomp with their right foot a little bit louder. You know that person. And I got the feeling that when he closes that door, she knows. Like she sees him, but maybe that's just a ghost, an apparition. But then he closes the door. Boom. Heart down. That's not in the text. That's just me. If I was ever going to like direct this as a movie, I wouldn't. But that's the way I sort of see it. She knows him. And he kills her. And everybody thinks it's because she was so happy. It's just true irony. This is a great story for that. And yeah, and it's just super far ahead of its time. You could tell. This story totally reads today, 2018. Almost 10 years later? That's impressive. It's really well done. I mean, even Twain sounds, I don't know, dated almost. But this was pretty much, it goes on for a little bit. It's got its little, what's the word that Steinbeck used? Hoop-de-doodle. It's got its pretty sentences, but where it goes off a little bit on her freedom. But that's all there to wrap it in. Yeah, Mrs. Kate. She's amazing. So that's been the episode for this week. That's what I got. Sorry that I don't have like clear, this was banned here and whatever. But this is a good one. This is a kick in the pants. I hope you liked it. Remember to follow us on Patreon if you want to help us out. Patreon.com/bandlibrary for $1 a month. You could get these episodes a week early. You get an extra short story. I started doing that, just pulling a random short story and basically doing exactly what I just did here, minus the author talk, because it'll usually be an author I've already covered. This week I'm doing Shirley Jackson, or this month for February 2018, we're doing Shirley Jackson. I just did Intoxicated, which is another fun one. It was just a little weird story. Also, you know, follow us on Twitter or Facebook if you want to contact us. There's a contact and support page. If you don't want to do a recurring Patreon donation, I get it. But if you just want to help us out a little bit, there are two places. There's a contact and support page on the website, bandlibrary.com. There's also a, I don't know what the hell you want to talk about it, what it's called, a bookstore is the best I could say it. If you want to get something out of it, I sell actual books that I've read here in the podcast, and there's digital books for usually the last one I've done is on sale. And there's extra audiobooks of those being read. So, whatever you can do to help us out. If you want to just give us money, there's Venmo, there's all that. And for everybody that has, I appreciate it. I don't have the list in front of me right now. I'm sorry. But you know who you are. You're the best. And that's it for this week. Thank you for listening. Stay in. Read a book. Music, Dances and Dames by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0.